The National Women's Soccer League, NWSL, just announced its 16th franchise in Denver, and it is all very exciting for the league and growth in women's sport. This is Finance of Football, and I am Asla Pellet.
And I'm Michael Array.
Hi, Michael. I see that you are wearing today the jersey of the most successful national soccer team in North America.
That's right. It's the Canadian. No, I'm just kidding. It's the United States women's national team jersey because there's 1, 2, 3, 4 stars atop of the badge.
And even before I moved to United States, I remember that how successful women's national team in America was, which was, it was surprising for a lot of foreigners to, because it's not a data that is perhaps outside of United States talked about. However, here in this country, it was clear to me as soon as I arrived, and I was at the ticker taper parade in 2019 in New York City when the women's national team came back gloriously with the World Cup.
Wait, hold on. I was there too. What street were you at?
You know, on Broadway, when you go down where the City Hall is, right around there, I was just filming everything. And actually, I had like a Megan Rapinoe moment, and I had a photo like right. She was higher than me, and I was taking a picture, and she was doing her thing, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. It was like really incredible. And that was the moment I was like, wow, Americans really love soccer. You know, like we really celebrated soccer and its passion and what it means for American people through their victories over the course of, you know, last 2 decades almost. However, now we're celebrating the success of women's soccer with an incredibly fast-growing professional league where they finished, a fantastic 2024 season. Lots of stars, lots of success stories, but also incredible valuations, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly right. And I think the success of the U.S. women goes back even further. You look at the 99ers and everything they did on the field in winning the World Cup, and then more importantly, off the field as well, being champions for equality in terms of pay, in terms of all the other things that then led to that, you know, equal pay lawsuit that, you know, the women's national team had in 2018, if I'm not mistaken, that has been groundbreaking. And you see other federations around the world taking note of that too. Colombia, for example, was one. Players really spoke out about the discrepancies between the men and the women. And, you know, again, it's winning on the field, it's winning off the field. And you're exactly right. You know, we all know that we have entered this women's sports era, which is probably decades overdue.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about it. I know you are as well, too. And especially on the soccer side with the NWSL, you know, the season hasn't even kicked off yet. And there's so many headlines and big news, and it's record this, it's record that. So let's take a look at some of the excitement so far.
Let's take a look at it. And I think we can start by, you know, mentioning a couple of player transfers, like, you know, New York City's, New York, New Jersey, Gotham FC's Crystal Dunn is leaving for PSG, for Paris Saint-Germain. That was last week's news. What else? I mean, we have a record-breaking transfer.
I was going to say, listen, Crystal Dunn is amazing, but the headline was Naomi Girma for a record $1.1 million transfer fee, the highest in women's soccer history. That's the headlines, right? She is not only the future of the U.S. women's national team, she is the present of that team. And it's just raising the bar again, which I feel women's soccer in the United States has done decade after decade. I know there's been some hiccups in terms of on the field, the last World Cup, but we bounced back and then won gold at the Olympics. We raised the bar. Everybody else has raised theirs because of that. And, you know, with Naomi going to Chelsea for $1.1 million, again, million with an M, that is a first in women's soccer. And it certainly won't be the last, at least in my opinion, because, you know, these player transfer fees and valuations are only going to go up and up as more people see the value in women's soccer.
And last year, I think one of the storylines that I researched often is comparing NWSL to Women's Super League in England, right? We have these legacy teams in England, Chelsea, Man City, Arsenal. By the way, just a quick note about that. Arsenal is one of the teams that I was talking often about how they're marketing their women's and men's teams, and they have like dedicated teams to that so that they can actually fill stadiums. And in fact, they had 60,000 people for women's matches in Arsenal Stadium last season, which shows, like you said, the interest to the sport, but also like, I feel like here in America, women's soccer is so good. We have no doubt people will, if we built it, they'll come to watch it, which is Denver's argument. And we will get back to that in a little bit. But I'm looking at it from a perspective of Australia, the Women's World Cup, I think was a great benchmark to show that these are very competitive matches that I think it's really fun to watch. And I think that's what makes evaluations go up. The on-the-pitch product is great. Mm-hmm. And in this last, I'm sorry, just want to add one more thing. I don't know if you watched the playoffs last year at NWSL in the championship, you know, match when like Marta performed.
The GOAT, you mean?
The GOAT. Exactly. Marta, yeah. I mean, that was, even my husband, who's not a soccer fan, was here sitting with me biting his nails watching that game. I think that was a great broadcast product.
Yeah, 1,000%. And we're seeing it from the investment in better broadcasts, right? I remember even just a couple years ago, there were issues that the NWSL championship game was going to be played at 3 o'clock Eastern time or something random like that. And we had sponsors. It was CBS and Ally and other allies actually of the women's game and of the NWSL said, that's not right. You know, this should not be an afterthought. And I think everyone really sees that women's sports and women's soccer in particular are not afterthoughts, that they should be equal to the men in terms of investment, in terms of, you know, the television production, in terms of all of those things. Because like you said, if you build it, they will come. And we're certainly seeing that when you have, you know, FC Barcelona and Arsenal and some of these Chelsea and some of these other clubs are filling out the quote unquote men's stadiums for women's matches. And that's a big seller here, tying back to our conversation at the start with Denver, is they were awarded this team in the NWSL because they are going to create a team and women's soccer specific stadium and facilities for, you know, this new team that's going to begin play in 2026. This isn't a, oh, we're going to play where the Colorado Rapids play, or, oh, we're going to play, you know, at some Division III college or anything like that. It's giving the women's team the support, the facilities, and the investment that they truly deserve. And that was obviously a big selling point for the NWSL with awarding Denver for a record, by the way, speaking of records, $110 million expansion fee, which is amazing to hear because only a that few just months, keeps going up and up.
And only a few months ago, that was $53 million for, you know, like just a year ago, with Bay FC and Boston was $53 million. They already double that record. Back then, we discussed it as a record franchise fee. And just to, perhaps people who are listening to us do not know that in 2020, Angel City FC's franchise value was $2 million and was sold over the summer to Willow and Bob Iger for $250 million. It's another record. And I was able to talk to Julie Ehrman, co-founder and president of Angel City FC. And she told me for an article I was writing for Front Office Sports that women's sports aren't a charity or a discount $10 tickets. They're actually best players in the world delivering incredible football, she said. It's seen in the semifinals and quarterfinals of the NWSL's, you know, playoff and the championship season. And it was just clear that, yeah, like a few years ago, everybody was like, oh, yeah, they can play in this stadium that has maybe 2,000, you know, seating capacity. Meanwhile, they're like filling up, like, you know, I think Washington Spirit sold out both of the playoff games, like back to back. 19,000 people, 12,000 people, 18,000 people. These are just numbers that are like now normal for women's soccer, which in some cases, maybe some men's soccer teams do not even get to that level in like other countries and like other, you know, regions. But there's clearly a lot of interest for women's soccer. That's like one thing that I think we're going to see over and over again. And I think you mentioned it earlier when we were discussing, and I don't think NWSL franchise expansions it will stop with 16 teams. There's no way, right?
No, of course not. And Commissioner Jessica Berman even came out and said, quote, "We see no reason we can't be at that size," in reference to Major League Soccer, which is introducing its 30th team, San Diego FC, in the 2025 season. So that's pretty much doubling what NWSL has now, knowing that, you know, Denver is going to be the 16th franchise. So to have 14 more is a testament to, again, that just the excitement around women's soccer and the investment in the NWSL. And it bodes well for a lot of those cities that were vying for this spot that Denver got. So we're talking Cincinnati, Cleveland. I know Philadelphia has expressed some interest in getting a team. Nashville as well, too. Smashville, Minnesota. So it's like we can see like the possibilities are almost endless because you have 14 more cities, 14 more markets that are saying we want your product in our backyard and we're going to create opportunities, whether it's facilities, whether it's, you know, stadiums, venues, all that kind of stuff like that. It's not just, hey, come here. And like I said, play in this, you know, random stadium. It's we want to support. And here's how we're going to do it. And here's why. And the fact that Denver, you know, was awarded an expansion for $110 million, I can't imagine what that 30th franchise in the NWSL is going to go for. It's going to be a lot more than 110. I'll tell you that much.
I know. And I agree with you. I think we will see that number go up to like over 250, I think, very in very short time, right? You know, it's already a franchise has been sold for 250. Plus, there are a lot of discussions within the league with the existing franchises. You know, a lot of investors are now looking at these, like whoever bought it for 2 million, they're going to want to sell it for 250 too, right? There's going to be a market to...
It's a great investment.
It's a great investment. And you said it when I was talking to you, like if you had the money, you would buy an NWSL franchise. Let's just not forget that because you were very smart about, I think, you know, thinking where you put your money. Instead of me, I really wanted to buy, and I still do, buy like a small Italian team where I would actually retire and just like show up and be like, hello, everyone. This is my little team kind of situation. Not thinking about making money at this point in my life.
Listen, that's a selfish, in a good way, that's a selfish thing, right? You're going to show up in like some awesome coat or jacket, like a cape or something cool, and just have your sunglasses on, some like Dior sunglasses or something.
And I'm going to be so tan. It's going to be, everybody's going to look at me like, is she a crocodile or is she a human being? That's the color I'm looking for when I'm
team 10. Owner. Well, I want, if I ever have money, like I said, I would love to invest in an NWSL team. So holler at me, please, if anyone has any money I can borrow. But no, it's, listen, again, people see the value. The interest is there. The support is there. And you talk about the support, Netflix, they're getting in on this, right? Yeah. They're not just doing, hey, we want to get these rights or we want to do this and the other thing. They're very much focused on the live sports. And these one-off events, they have the boxing, they have, you know, some golf events, the tennis and all these other things, but they are the exclusive home of the Women's World Cup for 2027 and 2031. If that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about the growth of women's soccer, especially here in the US, I don't know what else to tell you.
I think Netflix was super smart.
Netflix.
Yeah. I think they were super smart to get into that business because they know that that World Cup in Brazil, first of all, it's going to be great. I was thinking about that. I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be so good to go back to Brazil. After 2014, there were a lot of stadiums built for that World Cup. We're going to see how many of those stadiums are going to be packed to, like, you know, sold out for the Women's World Cup. Especially when you look at NWSL, how many Brazilian players already playing in our league. Clearly, you know, Brazil is producing a lot of goats, both from men and women's side. And I think by the time it's 2027, we're only going to witness another record-breaking televised mega sporting event, and that we will never be able to forget. I'm telling you, 2014 World Cup was so much fun. Going back to Brazil to cover that World Cup is just what I'm like, you know, hopefully I'll get to do it. And I'm sure you will be happy to have a caipirinha and like boom, boom, have fun in the beach while I'm busting my ass trying to get the stories and
Wow.
Enjoy watching them?
You know, that does sound amazing. I would love to go to Brazil and sit on the beach and hang out and dance and all those things. But I also want to be in the stadium.
No, you will be.
Okay. Because you made it sound like you were going to do all the work and I was just going to be working on my tan.
You will. I mean, like, this is always like last week you were like, why don't I just like catch up on Severance's second season when
it's work-life balance.
Yeah, I know. So that's why I didn't want to ruin your work-life balance. And I just suggested maybe when I'm like busting my ass interviewing people after the match, you can, you know, chill at the beach. And then that would be like, because I've already done that. You know, I've already been in Brazilian beaches.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I've never been. So I would love to go. And, you know, again, 4 years after that, it looks like the United States and Mexico are submitting a joint bid. They originally were looking at the 2027 Women's World Cup. They said, you know what, give us a little bit more time. We want to really hammer this out. And now they're going to do the 2031 is what they're going to submit for. And they're very confident that they're going to get it. And again, just coming off of the 26th Men's World Cup here, we have the Olympics in 2028. That is another major moment in soccer to focus on the United States and North American continent. And we just need to do our best to put our best foot forward. And based on everything we've talked about so far, we have. And I think it's just, how do we continue that momentum in those next few years leading into 2031? And especially, I hate to say coming down off of the high of the 2026 Men's World Cup, but there might be a little dip because we see it in this country, right? Every 4 years, everyone's like, oh man, I'm into soccer. You know, I'm following this team and the Ivory Coast. And, you know, they're picking out all of these random thoughts and I like this player and all that. That's great. But how do we find a level after the World Cup comes and goes, or after the US team is eliminated or something like that? How do we keep people excited? And I think having the Women's World Cup come a couple years later is going to continue that.
And that's very strategic. I definitely thought after you said that, why didn't they go for 2027? I think it is smart to see what happened. Like the year after the World Cup, I guess people are still very much like attached and interested and, you know, following teams and players, like you said. Then the Olympics will probably take over and we will just get, you know, we will have the Olympic fever in America. I think, and then of course the World Cup goes to 2030 Men's World Cup in Europe, in Morocco. And I think a lot of eyes will turn that way. In order to bring back to US, having a World Cup here in 2031 is actually strategically very smart to like, you know, how do we like have that conversation? And there is another, you know, I think, conversation I have been hearing from multiple sources that Club World Cup, the Men's Club World Cup, might be played again in the US, probably whether or not it's successful over the, you know, after this year's, you know, edition in United States. So we'll see that. But
I feel I've heard that too. I don't know if that was from you or from a different source, but I have heard that as well, that there is potential to rehost it, if you will, here in the United States after, you know, this summer in 2025, which obviously we're going to dive into in future episodes as it gets closer, because this is, you know, an expansion of what the Club World Cup has been in the past. They're obviously trying to include more teams, have a more global flavor to it, if you will. And I am curious to see what the reaction here in the US will be to this international tournament. Well, yes, to this international tournament that doesn't feature international teams, that you don't have that I'm from X, Y, and Z country, I'm going to root for them, but there's a club from that country that maybe you're not the biggest fan of because you're a fan of their rivals or somebody else. Do you then still support that club in Club World Cup? I'm curious about. So it will be interesting this summer to see what the excitement level is for Club World Cup. Obviously, as we look into 26, 28, 31. It's a great time to be here for soccer, certainly. Why, you know, you were listening to the press conference and all of the information. Why Denver? Why not Cleveland? Why not Cincinnati? I know it was kind of a very close race between those three cities, but what was a major selling point for the Mile High City out there in the Rocky Mountains?
From Rob Cohen, who led the franchise in Denver, said during press conference that the research showed that Rocky Mountain region, which is, you know, from Denver, you know, to Nebraska, to even to Kansas City, that, you know, a region actually was not only very fertile, quote unquote, for, I know it's maybe a weird word. It's a great talent hub for women soccer players. There's so many talent coming out of that region. So clearly there are a lot of people who play the sport there, but also there's a huge market for it. So that was, I think, the biggest selling point. Also,
well, you mentioned the fertility, if you will, of that region in terms of producing. We're going to keep going with this, by the way. Players, Lindsay Horan, Mallory Swanson, and Sophia Smith, all Denver area players.
Yeah. And I think the number I heard in that conference was 17 top players in the league. Like, very star players were from Denver area. So imagine having a team there and then one day all these local talent comes in place, right? That was like Rob's, you know, I think selling point, saying if we have a team here with all these star players, people are going to come fill the stadium and watch it.
You build up an academy and a youth system that then creates opportunities and a pipeline for those local Denver and Rocky Mountain players to now have a pathway to this NWSL club that they can either, you know, peak at, or they can go elsewhere in the league or abroad as well too. So it sounds like an amazing opportunity.
And the other thing was, and Jessica Berman was directed this question, if I'm not misremembering this, but about sponsors. So there's not actually a stadium plan yet in place. And they also did not know where this new franchise will play its games. That's also to be decided at a later date, because they're just starting, like this announcement just happened. So like they're now probably going into working all these details out. But they're definitely said that their plans to build a training facility, state of the art, and for a woman athlete, for women soccer players, you know, purpose built. The other thing is sponsors issue. That is also a region with tons of local sponsors coming in to support this team as soon as they have a plan in place. I guess they were introduced to a bunch of people, but also when you look at the ownership group, like I don't think they will have a problem bringing other sponsors, even though they're already a very powerful group of people with not only their own companies, but also their personal connections clearly will help bring a lot of money to this team to you know, grow exponentially very quickly.
Yeah. And you're seeing it from brands and broadcasters and investors that everyone now sees the value proposition in women's soccer, in the NWSL. You know, there are so many famous investors as well too, of other athletes of other sports that are invested in NWSL teams. You know, we have James Harden, Patrick and Brittany Mahomes, Eli Manning, Sue Bird, Carly Lloyd, like, and the list goes on and on, right? Naomi Osaka. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to keep thinking off the top of my head, but every team in the NWSL has almost a famous owner. And I didn't even get into all the people involved in Angel City, Billie Jean King and Natalie Portman, and there's just so many. The list goes on and on.
It's Alexis really, Ohanian.
For that club, it's definitely a Hollywood's who's who.
And they were generating revenue before they even kick a ball on the pitch, remember? They did an incredibly successful campaign about bringing sponsors and, you know, supporters and selling tickets for a team that, you know, before they even play a game, they already were generating revenue.
So what I mean, they set the bar. They really did. And these other new expansion teams that are coming in are looking at that Angel City model as the successful model of how do I introduce a team to a market? How do I market it? Branding, stadium, naming rights, like you name it. That's the blueprint until somebody else comes up with a better one, right? It's kind of like in soccer in general, everyone is looking at the Pep Guardiola system of here's the success. It's led Man City to success. On the field, no one knows how to stop it. Now everybody's playing out of the back. Every goalie's got the ball at his or her feet more than they do in their hands, because you find success with the system. And Angel City are that team that is leading the way for women's soccer and women's sports in the United States. It's why people like Caitlin Clark are joining bids, mm-hmm. you know, to bring NWSL teams to, you know, their respective cities, and why everyone wants a piece of this action. And like I said, I do too. I don't have the money, but if anyone is listening and wants to loan me some, I will happily put put it up in your name / our name, and we can get on this. We get on this NWSL train because it's a sure thing.
Yeah, and we cannot really talk about this without talking about Michelle King, who actually reset the bar when she actually paid $35 million for the Spirit. When everybody says $35 million, and look where we are now. She's not only spending money on her team to build a world-class team. She is the owner of the first woman multi-club model. She owns multiple women soccer clubs around the world. But also, she just invested $30 million into youth academies in the U.S. Soccer Federation, right? Like, she believes in the talent that this country is producing. And without that kind of, you know, financial, I mean, her financial support, I'm sure, will impact generations and generations of new players, new Megan Rapinoes, new Alex Morgans to actually come and, you know, set United States for success.
Listen, $30 million is a lot of money. Donating that to U.S. soccer to create more opportunities for girls and women in this sport is not a bad thing. It's going to take more than that, though. Right? It can't just be one person cutting a big check every decade or so. Mm-hmm. We need more people on board to understand why this is important. And like you said earlier, this isn't a charity thing. This isn't a, oh, it feels nice to support, you know, young girls and women. No, it's A, it's the right thing to do. B, it's a great business opportunity.
I would switch that. I say A is a great business opportunity.
Okay, even better.
And B is, I don't even want to say it. I mean, as a woman, actually, to be honest, I don't think it's the right thing to do. Works for me. Like, not that you say this. I'm just saying, like, in general, I think you look at it. You look at franchise valuation. You look at everybody, like, number, broadcast, ratings, everything. I'm like, this is a great business proposal. This is a great business opportunity. That's it. Period. I think that's it. I love to go with that as your co-host.
Okay. Listen, that works for me, too. But all signs point to yes, regardless of what those signs are. Yeah. And people are now noticing that the CBS, the Netflix, you know, this Budweiser, Bank of America, you name the brands, you name the broadcaster, you name the investor, people are all in. And it's just, it's exciting. It's exciting. I'm excited being on the outside looking in, but I'm sure it's even more exciting for the girls, for the women, and for everyone else involved in this league in women's soccer. And, you know, next stop, the moon.
Yeah. And we will be this year. I think we would go to, I mean, we're based in New York. So New York, New Jersey, you know, Gotham is a team that I watch many of their matches last season. And like, I'm hoping to travel further away from New York this year and go watch, you know, I want to go visit Kansas City. I want to see what this, you know, purpose-built stadium looks like. Like, what is it different about it? I want to have that experience. And I'm sure more like Angel City FC, we should go see them. I mean, I'm not saying like...
Let's go. Finance of football.
Finance of football live from LA. I think that's what I want to do this year.
That's right. Bob Iger, if you're listening to this, you need to have us come out to Angel City. We can do a live episode there, interview you and Willow. It sounds great. But no, of course, right? We obviously want to support our local team here, Gotham FC. You know, hopefully do an episode or something with them would be absolutely amazing.
Go see Martha in Orlando. She just said she's playing again two more years.
And let's go from there, right? And just do a little tour and just continue to raise awareness, because that's the biggest thing, is just telling people why this is a good investment, why you should care about this.
I think I want to take, you remember how when you asked me like who would be a great interview for Finance of Football, I think I would add all these franchise groups into my list and say, I want to sit down with all of them and hopefully in the next year and two, whatever, have them come to Finance of Football and tell us about, I think the first time when they heard about like someone coming into them, it's like, hey, do you want to invest? And how do they feel about that first chat today? Like, I think that is a great way to understand what was their initial, you know, interest in investing in NWSL. And how do they feel about that today when their investment like folded, you know, 100 times almost or 200 times over the course of two, three, whatever, 4 years.
based on their $2 million investment now being $200 million or whatever it is, I'm sure they're going to be very excited to speak about, to speak about why they invested at the ground floor and how it's grown exponentially since, and hopefully how it continues to grow year in and year out moving forward. As we, every year it seems there's new records. It's new record transfer, it's record investment, it's record expansion fees, and it's just going to keep going and going. So get on or get out of the way, I think is the biggest part.
Do we have any predictions for NWSL's next records? Like, what do you think it's going to be this year? I mean, they clearly broke the records on ratings and, you know, franchise valuations, whatever. Now transfer fees. What could be like, what is like one thing that comes to you that could be a new record for the league?
That's a tough one, because again, it's hard to sit here and, oh, they just set this record and they're automatically going to top it this year. Hopefully maybe something with merchandise or jersey sales would be amazing, right? That it's not only young girls are looking up to female professional players, right? Young boys do too. And boys and men of all ages. So I think just as the league grows in prominence and awareness, I think the players and the kits and all that stuff are going to seep more into pop culture as well too. So if I had to pick something that wasn't just set, I'm going to say jerseys or merchandise sales.
And it's funny, then, you know, jersey, because when I spoke to Kara Nordman about this, the reason she wanted to invest in a women's soccer team is after the World Cup 2019, she wanted to buy a woman's like a jersey, and I think she couldn't find it. And she was like, how come a world-class World Cup winning team doesn't have enough merchandise to buy? And I think that was her point of saying, like, there is definitely a market for it. And she invested in a very successful team today. So
I like that. Go to Dick's Sporting Goods looking for an $80 jersey and then put up a couple million dollars to buy a team. Like, talk about a different type of investment there. But I think just the accessibility of the merchandise and the jerseys, you know, working with different partners and distributors, like it's just going to continue.
And I think when I think about Club World Cup, I cannot not think that the Women's Club World Cup that Gianni Infantino mentioned.
She says, Gianni, you guys are on a first name basis. I like that.
I know, right? My buddy, Jen. I think that is going to be an incredible product for broadcasters and as a live event, considering this will be the opportunity to actually put some NWSL teams against Women's Super League teams against each other.
Yeah, and that's been proposed January to February of 2026 as a 16-team tournament. And just knowing that the Men's Club World Cup has expanded beyond that, I think, you know, in due time, the Women's FIFA Club World Cup would expand as well.
Oh, for sure. I mean, definitely. Bullish on that.
I love it.
Well, we can talk about NWSL's success in valuations all day long. Very important to mention when the new season kicks off.
That's right. Friday, March 14th. All 14 teams are going to be in competition that weekend.
Super excited. And thank you so much for joining us this week talking about NWSL with me, Asla Pellet.
And I'm Michael Array.
And this is Finance of Football. Shout out and thank you to our amazing producer, Ethan Joseph, and production assistant, Luis Yeo. We're here. Without you, we couldn't do this. So thank you.